Tonight on The Daily Debrief.
Justice for all is not justice for the defendant.
The state scores a win against the football player who sought to wipe out his conviction after his death behind bars. Plus,
the first bag we opened, it contained a torso.
The discovery of the headless corpse of a former judge buried on a golf course. Was he murdered by his own son? Also, a verdict in the case of a Kentucky man accused of murdering his coworker. And another sentence and even more criminal charges for President Trump's former campaign chair. The nation's top criminal cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Wednesday, March 13th. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Debrief. Aaron Keller here along with Judge Ashley Wilcott, Attorney Jesse Weber. It's going to be a great conversation. The murder conviction of former NFL player Aaron Hernandez will stand. That's the decision from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, and it wipes away decades of legal precedent in the Bay State. Aaron Hernandez's final battle was not on the gridiron, but in his state's highest court, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, today ruling that Hernandez's conviction for the 2013 murder of Odin Lloyd will not be erased by a legal abatement doctrine, which functionally wiped clean any conviction if the defendant died before exhausting his appeals. Hernandez committed suicide in jail.
Morning, Justice Gantz.
The state sought to force his conviction to stand.
The practice of wiping out a jury verdict like it never occurred is not fair or equitable and only serves the interests of the defendant. It does not consider the interests of victims in a conviction.
Hernandez's appeals lawyers wanted the conviction gone.
The interests of the parties are paramount, and in this case, the interests of the parties should control the outcome.
The abatement doctrine is not unique to Massachusetts. In 2006, a federal court used it to wipe clean the conviction of Enron chairman Kenneth Lay, who died of a heart attack before sentencing. The result, $44 million in restitution for Enron victims, was lost.
In the Ken Lay example, you see no injustice to either of the parties. So there should have been, the abatement should be okay.
I think the abatement ab initio is appropriate because it has a doctrinal basis.
Massachusetts now joins the increasing number of states to get rid of the doctrine. Alabama, Idaho, Michigan, Maryland, New Mexico, Ohio, Hawaii, and Washington State have all either gotten rid of the doctrine or limited it in the last 25 years.
Law and Crime Network host Linda Kenny Bodden represented Aaron Hernandez at his second murder trial. There, he was acquitted of murdering two other men. Here are some of her reactions to the decision today.
Really, the only effect that it has is twofold. One, it hurts his six-year-old daughter, Aviel, because she's got to grow up now with this conviction on the record when before it would not be on the record. And two, who does it hurt? Well, it hurts any possible civil suit in case somebody was trying to think of bringing a civil suit against the state for not properly, let's see, monitoring his jail cell, having drugs in the prison or whatever. So it kind of protects the state right now, and it may protect anybody in Massachusetts from being sued because Aaron would then have no damages because he's a convicted murderer. He can't even, because he's deceased, appeal the conviction, which the appellate lawyers had determined had some real appealable issues in it. I revealed this morning on Law and Crime for the first time that I have one of the letters that Aaron wrote, okay? And I carry it with me. It's always with me, okay? I feel very strongly about this. I sat next to him. I feel a responsibility to his daughter, Aviel, who's 6 years old. And, you know, if you see me now becoming out of my lawyer mode into a personal mode, I just think it's unfair to change horses in the middle of the stream.
Joining me tonight are Judge Ashley Wilcott and Attorney Jesse Weber. Good to see you both. Three hosts in the same room. That could be dangerous. Is it accurate to say that this ruling will basically give murder victim Odin Lloyd's family a shot at taking the money before, for instance, his fiance or his daughter get a crack at it? Judge Wilcott.
I think so. I think it leaves room for that civil lawsuit because now the conviction stands. So absolutely, I think it might.
Jesse, is there any other way to look at this that you've thought of?
Look, you can look at it both ways. I hear what Linda was saying, the idea that this was still ongoing. I mean, is it fair? He didn't exhaust all of his appeals. But the other sense of it is this. Do you discount when a jury comes up with a verdict or a judge decides something? Because based upon the rule that currently stood, it threw out everything that whole trial stood for. And that's a really important point that this court ultimately decided today.
And I did my research. We saw the map of all the states that have done away with this just in the last 25 years. And the legal trajectory here seems to be to focus more on victims' rights than on defendants' rights, because the courts are saying, look, the victims are still alive. The defendant is gone in this case. Judge Wilcott.
I completely agree with you, and I think the conviction stands because it hasn't yet been overturned just because they die. Should it go away? I don't know that it should.
All right, let's move along here. Day three of testimony in the case of a Florida man accused of murdering his father, a former judge, and dismembering the body before burying some of it on a golf course. Here's the case in chief.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
James Scandarito Jr. is charged with murder, but does not face the death penalty in the death of his father, James Sr. Prosecutors say a police dog found some of the father's remains buried at a golf course.
It is gruesome. It is despicable. In one of the garbage bags is the upper torso of a human being with the head cut off, decapitated.
The state says James killed his father after taking his money and using his debit card. Plus, the state says there's evidence of premeditation.
The defendant is eventually arrested in Alachua County on April 9th. And when he is, you'll hear that there are two different passports found with him. He has flight time itineraries. He has a contact number for a private jet company. The defendant is an individual who did everything he possibly could to get away with murder.
The defense says the former judge introduced his son to drugs and that the two were dealing drugs together.
Most of his business was in cash. The elder Scandarita was aware of this and sometimes would actually make trips to states like Washington and Colorado to assist with acquiring supply.
The defense argues that James Jr. chopped up his father's body after believing James Sr. died of a drug overdose. James Jr. feared that simply calling in the death would lead police to his stash of drugs.
Jimmy did something that he deeply regrets, and that is unfathomable to most individuals.
Today, a police officer testified that while the defendant allowed them to search his garage, his behavior raised suspicions.
It seemed as if he was a little uneasy in there.
Okay. And can you describe that for us or explain to us what you mean by that?
Just appeared he kind of wanted us to not spend a lot of time in the garage and gave us a little bit of conversation, then was almost kind of ushering us out a little bit.
Was he blocking any portion of the garage with his body?
I wouldn't say he was blocking any portion. There was one point where he kind of went in the corner and kind of stood in an area. In hindsight, he may have been attempting to block something.
Did you find anything of evidentiary significance in that area at a later time?
Yes, we did.
What did you find?
Some duct tape.
Later, the same officer testified that the defendant became even more strange during a walkthrough of the house.
The defendant was verbally confrontational about it, didn't really understand the need for a search warrant, didn't think we had to go to that extent, and was a little bit reluctant to leave the residence.
Did you direct the defendant to leave any property that he had with him in the residence?
Yeah, after he reluctantly agreed to leave the residence. We were near the kitchen area. There was some shelving, and he picked up a cell phone off of that shelving and slid it into his pocket.
And did you observe him do that?
Yes, I did.
What did you do in response?
I confronted him. I stopped him. I told him, as I explained to him when we were at the residence, everything in the residence needed to stay there. It was just the two of them that needed to exit the residence. Again, verbally combative with me about why I needed to have a cell phone. I just told him, unfortunately, that's the rules, and the cell phone stays in the house. Everything that's in the house when we seal it stays in the house when we apply for the search warrant.
Did he ultimately comply with that request?
Yes.
Did you observe anything that concerned you while you were in the garage before doing the formal search of the residence?
Yes.
What did you observe that was concerning to you?
Just the area where the kayak was. That seemed to be the only really uncluttered area in the garage, and it was very noticeable that the floor in that area was much cleaner than the rest of the flooring in the garage.
That raises a lot of questions. Are we looking at the location where the defendant carved up his father's body in the garage? Next, testimony from the scene discussed where the body turned up under a fresh patch of sand on a golf course.
We had two plastic bags that were both wrapped in duct tape.
And are the bags ever opened in front of you?
Yes, they are. One was partially torn open. One was still pretty well sealed.
When you say wrapped in duct tape, can you describe how the bag is actually wrapped?
It was a large black plastic bag. It was tied, and then the duct tape was around it in different directions.
Could you see how the bag was tied?
I'd have to see a photo. I don't recall.
Okay. And then you said one was wrapped in the duct tape, one was partially opened.
One was torn. I don't say it was partially open. It was torn. The bag was torn.
Was that bag also attempted to be secured with duct tape?
Yes, it was.
Are the bags opened in your presence?
Yes, they were.
And can you tell the members of the jury what you saw when the bags were opened?
The first bag we opened, it contained a torso of what appeared to be a white male. The torso, the arms were severed. There was no arms on the torso. And the torso was decapitated. There was no head on the torso. And it was cut right around the navel area, a full cut across.
Was the second bag that was still secured open as well?
Yes, it was.
And what did you observe was contained inside that bag?
Second bag was the lower torso. Again, that was severed right above or below the navel.
Joining me once again tonight are Jesse Weber, Judge Ashley Wilcott. Jesse, this is really disgusting testimony about what they found in the garbage bag at the golf course.
What's so eerie about this case is we have no answers. The fact that we don't have the head, which would have been a really good indication, especially for the ME, to understand the manner of death, we don't have that. We don't even know the manner of death. We don't know how it happened. All we know is that his remains were found on this golf course, and the last known person to be with him is the defendant.
And this testimony that the defendant was acting a little bit shifty, I never know quite how much stock to put in that. But Judge Wilcott, the victim is said to have had some sort of drugs in his system. We're waiting for more testimony about that. Is it enough for the jury to believe that he may have had a medical condition resulting from drug use, that he died naturally, and then, oh, the son decided to just chop him up and bury him?
Well, I just don't know that they're going to believe that, given some of the other evidence, inconsistent statements by the son. They talked about the area that looked to be clean. Perhaps there's going to be evidence that says, hey, there appeared to be a struggle, indicating he was in fact killed by the son. We haven't heard all the evidence yet. I just think the prosecution's going to put enough out there where they're not going to be able to say he simply dismembered his father.
And Jesse, we've got this defendant with two passports, cash, money moving around in strange ways between his account, his father's account. Is it someone who's trying to commit a premeditated murder, or is it somebody trying to deal drugs?
Great point,
because it could really go both ways. Is this somebody who's trying to cover up the fact that he cut up his father, or tried to commit a murder, or committed a murder?
And we have two sides. That's why we have a jury to figure it out. Still ahead tonight, here on The Debrief, new details about the college admissions scandal. Did the students know what their parents were doing, and will they face any consequences? Plus, a second sentencing in a second federal courtroom for President Trump's former campaign chair. Local prosecutors used the occasion to increase the legal jeopardy for Paul Manafort even further. More when we return. President Trump's former campaign chair has been sentenced to more prison time, but that's just the beginning of his legal troubles today. Paul Manafort will serve a total of 7.5 years for obstructing justice and for crimes related to finances and lobbying. One federal judge last week sentenced him to 47 months. Another today sentenced him to an additional 43. But Manafort now faces charges in New York. The Manhattan DA charged Manafort with mortgage fraud, falsifying business records, and conspiracy. If he is convicted of those state charges, President Trump cannot pardon him. An undocumented immigrant is under arrest over the death of a California woman, and he boasts an extensive rap sheet. Authorities say Carlos Eduardo Arevalo Carranza stalked a San Jose woman's neighborhood before allegedly killing her by stabbing her in the neck and beating her. The victim, Bambi Larson, was found dead in her home last month. Carranza's criminal record includes burglary, battery of a police officer, possession of drug paraphernalia, false imprisonment, and possession of methamphetamine.
The San Jose police chief says Immigration and Customs Enforcement had placed holds on the defendant six separate times. Doctored test scores, fake athletic recruitments, and hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes are all part of a nationwide scheme alleged to have been perpetrated by an elite set of parents looking to help their children cheat their way into college. Rachel Stockman reports on one young woman who prosecutors say benefited.
More details on what's being called the largest college admissions scam in U.S. history. Two actresses now facing indictments, including Full House star Lori Loughlin, who allegedly paid $500,000 to get her two daughters into USC. Now caught in the crosshairs, Lori's daughter, Olivia Jade, who posted this cringeworthy video shortly after moving into her dorm.
I don't know how much of school I'm going to attend, but I do want the experience of, like, game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
Olivia Jade is a social media influencer with almost 2 million YouTube subscribers and 1.3 million Instagram followers. Her YouTube videos are often focused on her college lifestyle, and she had sponsorships to make back-to-school-themed posts on Instagram from brands like Amazon and the Smile Direct Club. At the time, Olivia's class comments caused enough of a backlash for her to post an apology video.
I watch it back and I read the comments and I'm just really disappointed in myself.
But since federal prosecutors made their allegations Monday, her social media feeds have become inundated with snarky comments. Olivia has not been indicted, but the complaint suggests she may have been aware of the alleged scheme. For one, prosecutors say Olivia's father emailed a picture of her on a rowing machine despite her not actually competing in the sport. And after a guidance counselor at her high school questioned Olivia about her supposed rowing prowess, Loughlin sent an email to a cooperating witness with Olivia CC'd, saying, "I don't want to call attention to her with our little friend at our high school." Olivia's social media presence has gone dark after the allegations were made. Her mother, Lori Loughlin, surrendered to authorities and will appear in a Los Angeles federal court Wednesday, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. I'm Rachel Stockman for the Law and Crime Network.
A Kentucky man was convicted this afternoon after a second trial for the 2012 murder of a coworker. A jury agreed that David Dooley was responsible for the death of Michelle Mockbee. She was found bludgeoned to death at the factory where she worked with the defendant and the defendant's wife. The state argued that Dooley feared the victim would put an end to his wife's practice of submitting time cards for hours she did not actually work. Dooley received a new trial because the prosecutor in his first case failed to turn over evidence to the defense while having an affair with the lead investigator. Day four of testimony in the case of an Iowa man accused of murdering his mother because his own farm was failing and he needed money. Jason Carter has been found civilly liable for the death of his mother, Shirley, but he now faces criminal charges. Authorities think he staged the scene to make it look like a robbery. A police officer testified yesterday about a discussion he had with the defendant's father, the victim's husband. The defense says it proves Jason Carter could not have murdered his mother in the minutes leading up to his own frantic 911 call.
Did Mr. Carter describe hugging Shirley?
He kissed her forehead, I think he even said.
And he said that she was cold and stiff.
Your Honor, same objection.
Overruled. I think it's admissible pursuant to Rule 803-2.
I believe that was an accurate statement at that time.
In fact, he said that she was in rigor mortis.
I do believe he did say that.
He said he knew that because he'd been a butcher, and he knows when something's been dead a long time.
I believe that was true.
And he repeated again that she was cold and stiff.
That same witness said the first person to notice that a gun was missing from the father's gun safe was the defendant. The defense questioned the number of tips, though, that authorities received, which linked other suspects to the killing.
Has the Marion County Sheriff's Department received indicating that Joe Sedlock, Joel Folliwell, or John Folliwell were involved in the murder of Shirley Carter?
I do not know the number, but there's been a lot. I don't know a number off the top of my head. It's something I can find, but I can't tell you right now a number.
More than 20.
On different calls or different things? Could be.
Maybe more than 30?
I can't tell you. I mean, I The more than 20, I mean, that was even a guess on my part. I don't know for sure on how many there has been. Detective Caius, my detective, would have a lot better idea of those numbers than I would, because he's the one that's assigned to follow up on those.
And those calls date back to shortly after the murder.
What's your definition of shortly? I remember in the fall, I think, is when we started receiving those calls.
Back one more time to Attorney Jesse Weber, Judge Ashley Wilcott. Sounds like a really good cross-examination, Judge Wilcott. I know you love to see those.
Yes, absolutely. I think it was a great cross-examination. And this case is just this one fascinating to me because, as we know, he wasn't even charged until after the civil wrongful death suit was won.
Exactly, Jesse. It's a bit of an upside-down procedural history here, but, you know, look, do we convict this defendant based just on him acting strangely? He seems to know a little bit too much about the scene. The stage burglary, or was this a real burglary and the assailants just took off?
Well, if you're the defense, you want to say everything that was he said was taken out of context. And more importantly, investigators, they had a narrow view of him. Once they thought he was the suspect, they ignored other clues. And I've seen juries before look at that and say, you know what, a bad investigation? Forget it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate definition of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. We need thorough police work in these cases.
Absolutely, and that is exactly where the defense should go if they see any ground to say it was not a good investigation. And I believe in our jury system. I say it all the time. I think they'll see through that if that happened.
Exactly. Okay, so, Jesse, what's your take? Guilty, not guilty, if you were on the jury and you had to make a decision today?
That is so tough. I would say I don't have enough evidence right now. I really would think that. I really don't. I could look at it both ways, and there's certain things that bother me, but I have to say the defense has quite the uphill battle trying to explain half the statements that he allegedly made.
I'm not trying to just fiend being unbiased here, because if I had a strong belief, I would say, but I agree. Look, I mean, we're still waiting for this to roll out. We're still waiting for the rest of the state's case. Maybe there's some more evidence that will tip the scale one way or the next. Judge Wilcott.
I agree with you, but I think he did it. I mean, I do. Do we have all that evidence yet? No, but I don't know. The defense does have an uphill battle to show reasonable doubt.
Talk about an earthy trial. We have people saying, well, we know he really wasn't working in the barn because these lug nuts or whatever they are on the tractor, he said he was working on them. I could tell that they hadn't been touched. Great case, great analysis, Jesse, Ashley, and thank you for joining me on The Debrief tonight. I'll be back at 5 o'clock Eastern right here with this recap of the best moments in testimony nationwide. Live trial coverage picks up at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Jesse will probably be the one to see you there. Good night.